Isaiah 14. The previous chapter we saw last week was all about how God would be destroying Babylon. It was called the Burden of Babylon, or the Oracle, the Prophecy Against Babylon. We talked about this being a double fulfillment kind of a prophecy, how that it was partially fulfilled. See, Isaiah's writing around 700 B.C. It would be partially fulfilled in 539 B.C., when the Medes and Persians would conquer Babylon. But if you pay attention to the details in Isaiah 13, you got to really stretch it to make it seem like everything was fulfilled. It wasn't all fulfilled. Partially fulfilled. It will be completely fulfilled at a day yet to be named. In the future, a future Babylon of exactly what shape or form, I'm not sure we can nail it down. It's described in Revelation 17 and 18. And when Jesus comes back, that Babylon will be totally wiped out, as is described in Isaiah 13. And so we talked about this destruction of Babylon. We picked up chapter 14, verse 1, and it says, For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob, and will yet choose Israel, and set them in their own land, and the strangers shall be joined with them, and they shall cleave to the house of Jacob. Now, and you see that little word for, F-O-R, at the beginning. For the Lord will have mercy on Jacob. Why is the for there? It's the reason why God will destroy Israel's enemies, like Babylon. Why will He destroy them? Because God hasn't given up on His people. God hasn't given up on His people. He will again have mercy on Jacob. He will again choose Israel and set them in their land. God is not done with His people. In an earlier prophecy that talked about God's judgment on Israel, back in Isaiah 9:17, God said, I'm going to withhold My compassion on them. And see, the idea was that they had been rebellious. They hadn't been following the Lord. And so God's going to put a little pressure on them. He says, I'm going to hold back on My compassion on them until they would turn. Well, here, the people have turned. And God says, I will again have compassion on them. There will be a time in the future, I believe the very near future, they're getting very close, we're seeing bits and pieces of it fall right into place, when God will once again have the entire nation of Israel be chosen as His chosen nation, His most favored nation. We read about this in Romans 11:25. We'll be getting there soon not so soon. We're in chapter 9 on Wednesday nights. But we'll be there soon enough. Where God will again choose Israel as His special people. For now, there's a blindness in part on them. There is a remnant. There are some of God's precious Jewish people who do believe. But there will be a day when the whole nation will be following after Him again. There's a lesson here, and the lesson is this. Learn your lessons and get back to His compassion. Learn your lessons and get back to His compassion. We see several times in Israel's history where they would fall away and God's judgment would have to come. Because it's the only thing He can do to get them to turn around. In Isaiah's day, he writes around 700 B.C., from his day, they will continue to slip farther and farther away from God until in 586 B.C., they will be following after so many other gods that God will say, you know, I think you need a time out. Parents, you understand this, correct? You understand time. Say, talk about parents. You understand this now. Time out. You know, they say that with good parenting skills that you give 1 minute of time out for each year of age. And so if it's a 5-year-old, you give them a 5-minute time out. It seems like forever for them. When they get to be 10 years old, they can stand a little more. So they got to stay in that room a little longer, you know, not with the Game Boy though. And so if they're 10 years old, you know, time out for 10 minutes. The nation of Israel had to have a time out for 70 years. I guess they were really old, huh? They had to have a timeout for 70 years. They went in to this timeout. They went into captivity in Babylon with lots of gods. They worshipped every new little god that showed up in their junk mail. You know, come worship this god. And they go off. Well, that sounds like a new idea. We got a little space on the mantle for another god. You know, follow after every little god. But by the time their timeout was over and they came back, they had learned their lesson. When the 70 years were up, when their timeout was up, they had got to the point where they were calling out to God for mercy. We read in Daniel chapter 9, Daniel's praying for God's mercy. And when their timeout was up, King Cyrus of Persia conquered Babylon. And one of his first decrees was to say to the Jews, go home. Go rebuild. And when they left Babylon, they left with one God, Yahweh. They had learned their lesson. And they got back to God's compassion. You know, precious ones, we as Christians, don't get me wrong here. It's not that God stops loving us. Nothing can separate us from His love. Not that God stops loving us. But you know, there are times in our lives where we, with our hard hearts, our rebelliousness, we just want to do it my way. I want to go do my thing. I don't care what God says. And off I go. And God's gracious. He's patient. He says, you know, you ought not be going over there. That doesn't work. Oh, I'm going to do it anyway. You know, and then he says, you know, I don't think that's a very good idea. I'm going to do it my way, you know. And then he gives you a little more time to think about it, you know. And then he reminds you again. And maybe if you meet a friend from church, you haven't been at church for a couple of years, you know. And you meet a guy that you used to know at church. And he says, well, how are you doing in the Lord? And you kind of feel, oh, man, that's right, God was awfully good, wasn't he? Well, but I'm going to do it my way, you know. And off you keep going, hard-hearted. You know, precious ones, God loves us so much. You know, He doesn't enjoy watching His children run out into the street and on the freeway and playing. He loves us too much. And there are times where God's hand has to get a little heavy on us. And we go through some difficult things, clearly because we've been in rebellion and God's trying to get our attention. And don't get me wrong. There are times where we go through difficult times, and it's not because we've been in sin. Don't assume that every time you go through a difficult time, it's because there's some secret sin that you're hiding and even you don't know about it. No. It's not the way it works. I'm talking about those times where we've been away, where we've been shaking our fist at God, and it gets hard. I'm talking about those times. And if you're there this morning, I would say with all God's compassion, He wants to say to you, look, learn your lesson, turn around. You will find His compassion. It's waiting for you. Just turn around. Verse 2, Isaiah 14:2. And the people shall take them and bring them to their place. They'll go to their homeland. And the house of Israel shall possess them in the land of the Lord for servants and handmaids. In other words, the people that had been their masters will now become their slaves. He says, and they shall take them captives, whose captives they were, and they shall rule over their oppressors. Now, we talked about these partial fulfillments. When Cyrus conquered Babylon in 539 BC, again, he decreed that the Jews could go back to their land. There was a sense where this was partly fulfilled, but in no way did the Jews become the masters over the Babylonians. No, or the Persians or anybody else. They were still a subject nation. This part hasn't been fulfilled yet. It will, though. It will. They will be the chief place on earth that everybody will want to go to. Verse 3. And it shall come to pass in the day that the Lord shall give thee rest from thy sorrow and from thy fear and from the hard bondage wherein thou wast made to serve, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how hath the oppressor ceased, the golden city ceased, The Lord hath broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke, he that ruled the nations in anger, is persecuted, and none hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Now he's talking about that, you know, these people will go back, and the king who caused all this oppression will be brought down. The great oppressor will get, the tables will get turned on him. It's kind of, and so we're going to talk about the fall of this great king. Who is this king of Babylon? I'll give you a couple of choices. You can choose. Door number one. Some have suggested that it's a historical person like Sennacherib, who was one of the Assyrian kings in Isaiah's day. Now, wait a second. I thought it was the king of Babylon. Well, those who hold this view say that the Assyrians ruled over Babylon, and so he's the king of Babylon. Okay, that's fine. I'm not real excited about that view. Second view is that it is a real historical person named Belshazzar. Now, Belshazzar would actually be the grandson, I believe, of King Nebuchadnezzar, the great Babylonian king. Belshazzar was the one on whose watch Babylon fell. We read in Daniel 5, it was while he was king that he threw this big party for everybody, because the king of the city of Babylon was actually surrounded already by the Persians. But they thought that their city was impenetrable. They could go on forever with who knows how many people outside of their city. Nobody could touch them. So Belshazzar throws this great big feast. And then we know that actually God opened the back door and they fell that night. And so some hold the view that it is simply Belshazzar that we're going to read about. Others, including myself, hold a different view. And I think we're talking about a number of people. I think that it in part will apply partially to Belshazzar, a partial fulfillment. I think because other parts of this chapter haven't been fulfilled yet, I think it could be talking about a future person, a future ruler of Babylon. I think even more, some of this passage is going to be talking about an angelic being who is the real power behind the king of Babylon. I'll explain that when we get to verse 12. Let's see, where are we? Verse 8. So, this great king of Babylon will fall. The earth will be at rest. They'll break forth into singing, like, oh, happy days are here again. Verse 8. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee. Even the forests are going to get into this act here. Now, even the fir trees are going to have a great time. It says, and the cedars of Lebanon, they'll be happy too, saying, since thou art laid down, no feller is come up against us. Now, I think this is also what they say at the Tennessee ball. That's what the girls say on the side. They say, no feller's come up against us. Where's my rim shot when I need it? But a bump. Okay, that's King James. But you've ever wondered where we get these English words? This is right here. That's biblical, right? A feller, talking about one who cuts down trees. So the idea is that even the trees will be all stoked that this guy's fallen, because nobody's going to cut them out, cut them down to conquer some other nation. Verse 9. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It hath raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. Now, the word that is translated in the King James as hell, it's the Hebrew word Sheol. Some of yours may call it translated the grave. It may say Sheol or Hades. Before Jesus rose from the dead, and ascended to heaven. Before that took place, prior to that time, anyone who died, whether you were a wicked person or a righteous person, every person who died, their soul would go to Sheol, the abode of the dead, the place of the dead. We know from Jesus' description in Luke chapter 16 that Sheol had two sides to it, two compartments. One side was the place for the righteous dead. It was referred to as Abraham's bosom. Remember the story in Luke 16 where the man was being comforted by the poor man was being comforted by Abraham. It is also known, Jesus refers to it from on the cross as paradise. That part got vacated when Jesus died, preached to the captives and took them to home to heaven. The other half of Sheol is referred to as Gehenna. It is a place of torment. It is the place of the wicked. And I believe that's the place that's being described here. And so here in verse 9, everybody above the earth, above the ground, is all having a great time because this guy's dead. He's gone. We're glad he's gone. And now we shift the cameras, you know, take the camera off, you know, do that shot where you do the cutaway and you go through the earth and you see all the layers that there's to go down into hell and it gets all hot and fiery and stuff. And now we're going to switch and we're going to get a little insight of things that will happen in hell when this guy arrives. They're all stirred up. They're all like, who just showed up? What? Who just... Say that again? I don't believe it. He died? Oh! They're going to have a great time with this guy. They're going to have a great time with him. Ribbing him. Mocking him. Verse 10. All they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? And some of these are probably guys that he put to death. Or conquered. What? You've become as weak as we? Only weak people die, you know. No, actually, there's a lesson here, and that's this. We will all die. We will all die. I have a feeling, kind of the way that they're teasing this guy, is that he probably is going to be very surprised himself that he died. But you know what? The truth is, gang, we will all die. Our society has this goofy way of trying to avoid this truth. We see it lots of different ways. People get sick, we put them in the hospital because that's where they will get better care, but then we don't visit them. Hospitals give me the creeps. When I go visit people, people will tell me, oh, they give me the creeps. The bottom line is, people die in hospitals. I'm afraid if I go in there, I might die someday. Well, I'll tell you what, you go to McDonald's, you may die someday too. You know, and not necessarily from McDonald's. I mean, guess what? You went to church today, and you know what? You're going to die now. Not because you went to church, but because we will all die. When people die, we have funerals. You know, not everybody goes to the funeral. Why? Oh, I don't want to see a dead person. Scary. I might catch what they had or something. You've already got it. Every single one of us will die. It does not happen just to old folks. Well, people over 40. Happens to all of us. Teenagers die. Children die. The real questions in life are not about how to live longer. How to get a few more years out of this body. That's not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. But that's not what it's all about. The real question is, are you ready for the other side? Are you ready? Or are you going to be the fool who will pretend it's never there, it will never happen to me, and one day I will be doing your funeral? Don't be the fool. Ecclesiastes 7:2 says, it is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting. For that is the end of all men. And the living will lay it to his heart. We all ought to go to more funerals. Hey, as a pastor, it's like part of my job. That wasn't a part that I really like enjoyed getting when I, you know, became a senior pastor. It's like when I was assistant pastor, I could kind of wiggle out of most of them. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm getting busy. It's your job, you know. I remember the first batch of funerals that I did. I remember just like, you know, going to mortuaries and seeing open caskets and dead bodies. And it almost doesn't bother me anymore because you know what? This is what it's all about, gang. This is what it's all about. Are you ready for the other side? Well, yeah, I'm kind of ready. I know this week I did five good things. And I only did about three bad ones. So I think I'm heading in the right direction. You know what, friend? You are heading for hell. If that's what you think. You have been deceived. The truth is that God, though He is loving, He is also just. Everyone will get what's coming to them. The price for sin is death. Separation from God. Romans 6:23. I'm not making this up. And if you want to, you can pay for your sins. You can die and go to hell. But you know what? God really don't want you to do it that way. He's got a better plan that someone else would pay for you. And that's what His Son Jesus Christ did on a cross. And so God offers you for free, absolutely free, a ticket to heaven if you will trust in Jesus, if you will follow Him, if you will choose to let Him pay for you. You know what? You got to pick up the ticket. You got to receive it. It's no good if it's just laying on the conductor's desk out at the train station.
Well, I really meant to pick it up one day. But I never got around to it.
No, you got to pick up the ticket. You got to say, Jesus, I need you. You ready to die? Verse 11. Thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy viols, your harps, your musicians in your court, are brought down with you. The worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. You know, the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. I was thinking, anybody up for Spaghetti Factory today after? Now, if anybody goes over there, don't anybody sing that song. I'm not sure I want to say quite everything here, but this man lived in great luxury, great majesty, pomp, musicians, and all these people surrounding him. You know what? How many of them made him down to hell for him, with him? Zero. There's an old saying, they say, you can't take it with you. Other people say it this way, that we have yet to see a casket with a U-Haul behind it. Actually, and I've heard of people who do that. I heard of somebody who got buried in their Cadillac. You know what? The Cadillac is in the ground right now. It is not in heaven or hell. It's in the dirt. Make sure, gang, that you are storing up your treasures in heaven, not on earth. If you put all your bucks into what happens on this side of life, you know what? You're going to be awfully disappointed when you get to the other side. Make sure you lay up treasures in heaven. Verse 12. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. Now, I believe that here, starting in verse 12, we start taking a peek at the person behind the king. A person that we refer to as Satan. Now, not everybody holds this view. Some say, well, no, really, this isn't Satan. This is just the king of Babylon. He is called Lucifer. The Hebrew word means shining one or morning star. And this is a term, Job 38:7, that is used of angels. The morning star is actually the planet Venus. It shows up early in the morning. Just before sunrise, you'll see it. It would be the only thing shining for a little while when it's visible. And as the sun comes up, it'll fade away. So it's only there for a little while. Now, why do I believe this is referring to Satan, the power behind the king of Babylon? First, there are angelic beings which seem to be connected with earthly political powers. We see this in Scripture. Daniel chapter 10. Daniel has been praying, and angel Gabriel shows up after 3 weeks of praying. And the guy says, hey, Danny, old buddy, I've been trying to get to see you for 3 weeks, but this guy, the prince of Persia, was standing against me. An angelic being behind Persia who is holding Gabriel back. There are angelic beings behind what goes on politically. We don't see it, but it's there. In Ezekiel 28, verses 12 through 20, there's another very similar passage to this, talking about the king of Tyre, a real guy named the king of Tyre. And then all of a sudden, Ezekiel starts talking about this guy having been in the Garden of Eden. Whoa, he must be really old. It talks about him being the anointed cherub that covers. Wait a minute, we're talking about an angel here. Actually, the same angel, Satan. There are some characteristics, 6 of them, let me just mention them real quick, that are just too obvious about Satan. First, this person is called fallen from heaven. That supposes he was in heaven in the first place. Satan is in heaven. Don't think that he's down in hell sitting on a throne. That won't happen for a while. He is in heaven accusing us night and day before God. Revelation 12, verse 10. Secondly, this person is called, the light bearer, the morning star. Satan, in 2 Corinthians 11, verses 13 through 15, talks about he transforms himself into an angel of light. Don't think Satan is some big ugly creature. He was probably the most beautiful creation that there ever was. That's why people love to follow him. He doesn't entice them with, follow me and I'll make your life horrible and yucky. You'll vomit all the time and you'll just have a great life, a horrible life. No, he entices them with good things, doesn't he? Thirdly, Satan loves to imitate Jesus and deceive people. Jesus is the morning star, Revelation 22:16. This guy is going to pass himself off as a copy. Fourthly, Jesus refers in Luke 10:18 to seeing Satan fall from heaven. And one day, Revelation 12:10, Satan will be cast out of heaven. Fifthly, Satan wants to take God's place in having everyone worship him. This guy wants to take the place of the Most High. Matthew 4, verses 8 through 10, he's even trying to get Jesus to worship him. This is just too much like Satan. And lastly, Satan will be one day, this guy will be thrown into a pit. Satan will one day be thrown into the abuso, the bottomless pit, Revelation 22. And will later be thrown forever into the lake of fire, Revelation 20, verse 10. I believe this is Satan. We're suddenly the cover is peeled off and we're seeing what's really behind this king of Babylon. It is Satan. Let me just end with a couple of things here. Oh, I know. One more thing I need to explain, because this was fascinating. In verse 13 it says, "For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God." Stars of God referring to angels, Job 38:7. He says, "I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north." The mount of the congregation is Zion. This is the location in Jerusalem where the temple is to sit. The sides of the north, referring to the side of the mountain that the temple would be at. This guy wants to sit in the temple, set up his throne there. The Antichrist, who we know from Revelation 13:2, is empowered by Satan. He will one day set up his throne in the temple and demand to be worshipped as God. 2 Thessalonians 2:4. This is Satan. This is Satan. Now, let me apply two lessons. First lesson, let's learn to take an eye exam. I don't mean EYE exam. I mean capital letter I exam. If you look at this passage, verses 13 and 14, one word pops out. Actually, a couple words do, but one word pops out a lot, five different times. Word I. I. Aye, Captain. That went right over your heads. I think there are at least two kinds of people who have eye problems. The first kind is the person who thinks that they are absolutely the bestest thing to ever happen to planet Earth. They think they are better than sliced bread. They are totally in love with themselves. They really think they are a cut above the rest. They know that they are better than everyone else. And you'll hear them talk about nothing other than the best thing in the world, which is themselves. I think the second kind of person who has an eye problem is just the opposite. They think they are absolutely worthless. They think that God made some serious mistake when they were born. They think that everyone else is better than they are, and everyone is secretly laughing at them. And so to make up for all their shortcomings, they also will talk about nothing else but themselves. Sometimes you hear it when people share prayer requests. How often do we ask for prayer only for my things? How often am I concerned about other people and I ask for prayer for them? Sometimes we disguise it. We say, "Well, I want you to pray for this person. They're having a lot of problems." And what we're saying is, if God can fix them, it'd make my life a whole lot easier. What is that? That's still the I thing. This is all in direct contradiction to what God has for us. Matthew 16:24, then said Jesus to his disciples, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." But Rich, you don't understand. My needs are really, really great. I'm really horrible. I've got lots of problems. I need lots of help. Let me ask you, is Jesus big enough to help you? Could you put them in his hands, your problems? Could you put your problems in his hands for just a day? Maybe let it go for just a day and think about other people. Dr. Carl Menninger of the Menninger Clinic, he's a psychologist, was asked, if someone felt a nervous breakdown coming on, what would you suggest that he do? This is his response. "If you feel a nervous breakdown coming on, I would urge you to find somebody else with a problem, a serious one, and get involved with that individual, helping him solve his problem." Now, you know, I know I've heard that it's possible that we could abuse this and we get so involved with other people's problems that we don't take care of our own problems. I understand that. But gang, you know what? Frankly, from my perspective as a pastor, I think the people that are the healthiest in our church are the ones that are involved in other people's lives. It's not that they don't have problems. Many of them have much worse problems than any other people in the church. But they are other-oriented. They are more concerned about other people's needs than they are their own. Do they ignore their own problems? No, they don't ignore their own problems. I remember a long, long time ago hearing a little anagram, what the word joy, what you could do with the word joy, J-O-Y. How do you get joy? You put Jesus first, then others, then yourself. That's joy. Putting others first. Now, one last little quick thing here. I said the word I was very prevalent in those verses 13 and 14, talking about Satan. There's another word that's very prevalent. It's the word that follows the I every instance. It's the word will. Will. And you know what, precious ones? There is a danger when it comes to self-will. The danger of self-will. I think there are certain situations where we need to be careful that we aren't the ones pushing our own agendas all the time. It's not that we can't have ideas and share them. Please, please. Don't take this and go, well, I just can't tell anybody my ideas anymore. They'll have to read my mind. No. It's not that you don't have ideas. It's not that you don't have talents. But once you've shared, do you continue to push until you get your way? Ask for and look for confirmation that your idea might be okay. Ask for advice and don't put people in the position of not wanting to hurt your feelings. We do that a lot. Well, I want to do this and I was thinking the other day, what would happen if I don't get to do this? Man, I'm just going to be devastated and destroyed. And what do you think I ought to do? Be careful that you aren't the only one promoting you. Again, we need to share our availability with people. We need to share our abilities with people. The flip side is that some people think, well, I just don't want to push myself on people and stuff. And so why didn't you ask me to do something the other day? Hello? How do I even know you can do this thing? You know, I mean, there's a balance here, but precious ones, don't be the only one promoting you. Stop promoting yourself and see if anyone else thinks you're as great as you say you are. Proverbs 27:2, let another man praise thee, and not thine own mouth, a stranger, and not thine own lips. Psalm 75:6, for promotion cometh neither from the east, nor from the west, nor from the south. But God is the judge. He putteth down one and setteth up another. We need to be careful about the I problem. We need to be careful about self-will. Because you know what? You know who does that all the time? Don't want to be like him.